Internationally acclaimed pianist John Kimura Parker is opening up the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra's brand new season with a bang, quite literally, at least coming from the timpani. He is performing the dramatic Piano Concerto No. 1 in D minor by Johannes Brahms, a work that opens up with a loud declamatory roll from the timpani. Also in the concert is Paul Hindemith's Symphonic Metamorphosis on themes of Carl Maria von Weber and Bright Blue Music by Michael Tork. The concert will be given Thursday and Friday nights beginning at 7:30, as usual, at the Tennessee Theater. Mr. Parker came in to speak with me yesterday about the concerto and some other projects that he is involved in as well. Mr. Parker, it's great to have you here in the studio at WUOT. Thanks so much for coming to visit us.
Thank you so much. This is great. I would hate that my very first visit to Knoxville would only be the hotel and the hall.
Absolutely. Yes. So great place to visit, I think. I might be a little biased. Tell us about the early days of your playing. When did you start studying the piano, and was it your first instrument?
Yeah, I started piano when I was four. It wasn't quite my first instrument. I started violin when I was about 3 1/2, and I basically took the violin apart and undid the strings, and the bridge fell off, and I thought, oh dear, I've destroyed it. So I just put it in the trash, and and my mom rescued it from the trash. But we tried piano next, and that worked perfectly.
You didn't throw that one in the trash.
Yeah, that one I just couldn't lift it. Yeah, I have loved playing the piano since the minute I played my first note, and I started by learning to play tunes by ear. I mean, actually radio programs that my parents used to listen to every day, and I would hear the theme music every day, and I started picking out the tunes with one finger on the piano by ear successfully. And I still to this day, I love doing that. I hear, my daughter is 15 now, and she's introducing me to all this music that I don't know, like dubstep and things, and I'm trying to learn that stuff by ear, and it's great. It's great fun.
When did you give your first performance?
Well, I actually managed to perform a quasi-concert when I was five, and it was with the Vancouver, I grew up in Vancouver, Canada, and it was with the Vancouver Youth Orchestra, and I played On the Treetop, which probably takes about 45 seconds to play, but there was a party trick in which the conductor would say to the audience, now I'm going to ask Jackie, which is what everybody calls me still, I'm going to ask Jackie to play this piece in F-sharp major, and then I would transpose it into a new key, and now we'll do it in D-flat major, and I guess I was able to do that. So my only memory of that concert, I don't remember the concert, I remember the rehearsals, but what apparently happened at the concert, which has been ingrained in my memory because everybody still talks about it, is that I walked on stage wearing a white suit. I was five, remember, and I got lost in the violin section and couldn't find the piano.
Oh, no.
Which is such a great, cute image, you know, that people still remember and talk about it. But anyway, so it was a long time ago.
You've been bestowed with the title of Officer of the Order of Canada. What is this exactly, and how does one earn this title?
The Order of Canada is something like the Canadian equivalent of the Presidential Order of Freedom here. It is a very special honor given to a Canadian citizen who not maybe has just been really good at what they do and prominent at what they do, but has somehow used that position to better their country. And one of the things that I'm was very proud to be a part of, for example, was a project called Piano 6, which involved six Canadian pianists. All of us are internationally based now and traveling and performing. But we all donated a couple of weeks a year to play recitals in small communities. And I always had this big desire to go up north. I mean, I know that Canada already seems up north from your Tennessee perspective, but really up north. And I went up to Baffin Island and up to towns in the Arctic Circle and traveled around with an electronic keyboard and an amp, played in Inuit schools and all sorts of things. It was just the most incredible experience. And I was playing largely the same music I would play anywhere else. I mean, whether it was a Beethoven sonata or whatever the music was, I would talk about it and explain what, you know, how the emotions of music, I mean, you hear Brahms, you hear great music, and the emotions of that music and the emotions that reflect what was happening in that composer's life, those are all relevant to our experience today. I mean, our experience today is different in so many external ways, but the internal stuff, it's very similar.
Mm-hmm. What was the reaction that you received there?
I think for a lot of people, they were just grateful to have anybody show up. You know, I mean, you know, when they say, you know, 90% of anything is showing up. Well, I mean, that's really true when you're in a town like Arctic Bay. You know, I mean, it's really remote, and I think everybody just loved the experience of, and it turned out to be a mutual exchange of ideas. I would play my recitals. I also was treated to a group of women doing what's called Inuit throat singing, which is a sound that I couldn't possibly imitate, which they did for me. It was fantastic.
I read that you're also a media personality. You host a show on Bravo called Whole Notes and also a show on CBC Radio called Up and Coming. And you have your own YouTube channel, which features your informative concerto chat video series, which I checked out. Can you tell us a little more about these programs?
Everything that I do that's media related is about bringing what I love about music to as many people as possible. And there are so many different ways of doing that, but maybe not even as many people as possible, but in a meaningful way to the people who are interested. You know, I think classical music is still extraordinary to me that, I mean, there is this feeling that, well, you know, many, many traditional art forms are battling a little bit for public attention, for underwriting, funding, and support, and all that. And that's true, and that'll always be true. And yet, most of them are surviving all over the place and doing pretty well. And I actually think if you're talking about a symphony orchestra that, of course, is premiering new works and connecting with the community in all these ways, but it still has as its core a lot of 18th and 19th century music, let alone 20th century music, I think that's extraordinary and really speaks to the fact that those art forms matter and still speak to us and still communicate to us. So when I embark on a project, there are different kinds of reasons for it. The Up and Coming project was a radio program where I featured young musicians. And again, it was based in Canada, and I was working with young Canadian musicians, giving them a chance to be heard. It was very important for me that I would interview them and get their take on you know, how they're experiencing the world and music and what music means to them and how they would perform. The Whole Notes television show, which was broadcast on Bravo, was a chance for me to talk about various different composers, do a little bit of a survey of their works, have a little bit of a shtick in the show and have some fun with it, and really produce television about these different composers. And the Concerto Chat videos are, I mean, it's the YouTube age now as far as video goes, and I think it's much more interesting what you can do in 4 minutes in a way than what you can do in 30 minutes. I mean, you look at Vine, I mean, you know, what can you do in just a few seconds, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's some way that all of these different kinds of media can be used to communicate a little bit from behind the scenes, from behind the performer's view, from, you know, what is actually going on? You know, why is this great? Why are we doing what we do?
You teach at the Shepherd School of Music at Rice University in Houston. How many students do you have there?
I have 8 full-time students. I have a few part-time students who are usually doctoral students who are, I'm not seeing them every week, but they're still in residence at the school. I teach, I coach chamber music groups and take part in all the other kinds of things that you do when you're a professor at a university. It's so rewarding to work with these very, very gifted students. I mean, the Shepherd School at Rice is now one of the high-level schools in the country. It's probably the youngest of the high-level music schools in the country, and the standard is high. The level of engagement of the students is very inspirational to me. I love that I can share not only, let's say, what I might know about the style of a composer, or, you know, a technical trick, you know, how to handle a certain difficult octave passage or something, but I can also talk about my experiences on the road, and I can say, look, you know, you know this part, and it sounds great, but you've got to remember that in this part of the concerto, the French horn has a solo, and basically you need to follow the horn there. I mean, you know, they're going to do what they want to do, and the conductor is going to think that they're influencing what the horn player does, but if it's really a horn solo with just with piano accompaniment, it's kind of a little bit up to the two of you, and all of that kind of stuff is so gratifying to teach. And I have a few very advanced students who are now making careers for themselves and performing internationally and doing all sorts of exciting things, and it's just thrilling to see it happen.
One of your students actually performed with the Knoxville Symphony last season, Andrew Stoppe.
Andrew Stoppe was here in the spring, and he's exactly what I'm talking about. He is not only brilliantly gifted as a pianist, and very musically sensitive, I think. But he has artistic ideas, and he has the right kind of personality. I mean, he clearly loves doing this. I mean, he's so excited when a new concert opportunity presents itself, and he's so thrilled at the act of preparing really well for it and everything about it. So, yeah, I see a fabulous future for him, and it's really exciting to have just been a small part of that.
You are performing the Piano Concerto No. 1 by Brahms with the Knoxville Symphony. When was the first time that you performed this work?
I was just thinking about this in rehearsal yesterday. This is crazy, but this is my 30th year of performing the Brahms First Piano Concerto. I learned it almost to the day, actually, to perform in the, I learned it to hopefully perform in the finals of the Leeds International Piano Competition in England, which took place in September of 1984. And of course, when you enter one of these competitions, the way it works is you have all these solo rounds, and gradually people get eliminated, and eventually there's only six people left, and you play a concerto with the orchestra. So, of course, I didn't know that I'd be playing it with an orchestra. And it's very awkward to prepare a piece when you don't know if you're going to be playing it a few weeks from now or mm-hmm. not, you know? And when it got to the point that they announced that I was in the finals, I just freaked out because I was so excited that I was going to play Brahms 1 with an orchestra. I remember thinking this might be the only time that I ever play the Brahms First Piano Concerto with orchestra. Better make it a good one, you know? And it is incredible to have the experience of playing a work like this with orchestra, because the background of the Brahms First Concerto, which is on the second half of tonight's program and tomorrow night's program, the background of the Brahms Concerto is that it was supposed to be a symphony, and Brahms really, really, really wanted to write a symphony, and his level of expertise at that point was truly piano music. But he desperately wanted to write a symphony, and every time he started, somebody would say, oh, finally, after Beethoven's 9 symphonies, finally, we can call this one Beethoven's 10th, ha ha. And Brahms thought, no, I can't do it, that's too much pressure, and he caved and came up with something else. So finally, he hit on this idea that a piano concerto would be perfect. But as you said at the very beginning of this interview, there is this crashing timpani opening of the piece, and you would be forgiven if you're sitting in the hall listening to the Knoxville Symphony play this piece. You'd be forgiven for thinking, oh, it's a symphony. You know, I mean, it doesn't sound like a piano concerto at all. And then when the piano makes its first entry, I'm almost sneaking in at first. And I'm taking the most lyrical thing that happened in an otherwise somewhat violent opening, and I'm taking that lyrical thing, and that's the first entrance of the piano, which very quickly gets a kind of explosive, and then the piece becomes, you know, what everybody knows it as, is one of the greatest masterpieces we have. You know, it's an extraordinary experience. But I'll never forget that first time, and I can't really believe it was 30 years ago.
As you mentioned, this concerto is quite symphonic. I would imagine that it would require a lot of collaboration between you and the orchestra and the conductor.
It's very common. This might be a part of the rehearsal process that many concertgoers don't know, that the total amount of time that a pianist and a orchestra rehearse with a conductor is, there's a dress rehearsal that gives you a chance to play through the piece once and fix a few things. And the day before, there's a longer rehearsal. But that's it. I mean, it's not a lot of time. And so conductors and pianists always get together before that first rehearsal, and we have what's called a piano rehearsal, where I just sit down at a piano and I play through the piece for Lucas, and he listens and takes notes and makes suggestions and whatever it is, but we have that kind of interaction. And with many concertos, that piano rehearsal, but which is before the orchestra shows up, that piano rehearsal can take as little as 15 minutes. You know, you can go through some pieces and say, well, I'm going to be taking a little time here, and would you mind trying to do this with the violins here? And you can really zip through pretty quickly. In the case of the Brahms 1, Lucas and I spent almost an hour and a half, just the two of us, really going through the piece in detail and working everything out, because it is subtle in the way, the kinds of things that a conductor is required to do. And what was so gratifying was that in the first rehearsal, in the first read-through, many things went very well, but there were clearly rough spots. And immediately we went back to rehearse them, and Lucas knew what I was hoping to do, and I knew what he was expecting the orchestra would do. And the improvement at the end of that first rehearsal was astounding. You know, I mean, you get that much done in a fairly short amount of time. And, of course, the bulk of my preparation is before I arrive here in Knoxville. I mean, it's just from having performed it before and worked on it. But that process is very exciting. And what I really enjoyed was the fact that because the Knoxville Symphony is a very experienced group, and because the Brahms is such an orchestral piece, they're playing this in a fully invested way. I mean, they're not playing it like, oh, well, it's a piano concerto and, you know, my part's not that important. They all know how important all of their parts are, from that first timpani roll to everything else that happens. The bass section has all sorts of incredibly important moments in this piece. And there are many piano concertos where the bass section doesn't have much, you know, that's truly interesting. So you add all of that up, and the experience is phenomenal. It's just been absolutely great to work with these musicians.
Do you still get nervous before you perform?
I think about how much I want to do the best possible job that I can. I know that when you're an artist, the word perfect doesn't really ever enter into your official vocabulary, mm-hmm. You know? There's always something that mm-hmm. you think you could do differently, at least, if not better. But so I get a little nervous that, you know, I want to be sure that tonight, for this performance, I'm giving everything that I've got, and it's the best that I can possibly give. And, of course, much of my assurance for that comes from the kind of preparation that I've done. And yet, at the same time, we're all realistic as performers that there's always a few little things that aren't quite perfect. But that isn't the point of what we're doing. I mean, the point of what we're doing is communicating the essence of this extraordinary piece of music, giving people an opportunity to experience it live with each other in what is, by the way, an incredibly beautiful concert hall you have here. It's just gorgeous theater. And to have that collective experience, you know, that's what makes it so wonderful, I think. So I get a little nervous, but generally not debilitatingly nervous. I mean, I've had times when I've felt a little on edge for one reason or another, but most of the time I'm just thrilled to be there.
One final question. Do you have any pre-concert rituals?
Pre-concert, I mostly want to make sure that I'm entirely collected. And one of the silliest of pre-concert rituals that almost all musicians should do, I think, is to remember the first note of what they're going to play. And on the piano, you know, if the first note is an A, you know, you have like, you know, eight choices, right? So, you know, you have to make sure you know which one. That's a surprisingly common occurrence with kids who are performing a piece that they've played over and over 100 times. And then they walk on stage and I don't remember where it starts, you know. So there are all sorts of little things like that, you know. Try to make sure that there isn't some absolutely ridiculous piece of lint hanging off of the elbow of my jacket or something. And, of course, if you're a guy, you got to make sure your fly's up. I mean, that's critical.
Very important. Well, Jackie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you today. Once again, thanks so much for coming in to talk with us.
Thank you.
Once again, that was pianist John Kimura Parker, who is performing the Piano Concerto No. 1 in D minor by Johannes Brahms with the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra this Thursday and Friday evening, September 18th and 19th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at the Tennessee Theater. More information on this event can be found online at knoxvillesymphony.com or by phone at 291-3310.